Okay, but can you give me some broad brush feel of?
Let me try to do this.
Is it, you know, like half or three quarters is cash, the rest is non-cash transactions?
PIK is about 5% of our income.
Okay. But I'm still trying to get a gross feel for that on the guidance, whether it's a quarter, a third, whatever would be non-cash because it's the.
Let me try this with an example. If you have a $100 loan that you purchase for 50 cents.
No, I understand. I understand the discount and the accretion,
right.
And I'm just.
You could potentially have cash received well in excess. It could be more than 100% of the income be cash. When cash is fungible, there's cash associated with income, there's cash associated with principal repayment as well. And I guess it's a long way of saying it depends, Jim.
Okay. Along the same line, I'm trying to get a feel. If you look at, say, January 1/09 versus December 31/09, again, a broad brush feel for what's responsible for the change in the net asset value. And I'm thinking part of it may be the dilution caused by Patriot or whatever.
Patriot, we expect to be accretive over time. And I would say it's two general categories from January 1, 2009 to 12/31/2009 is number one, changes in portfolio valuations, primarily associated with the economic cycle that we've been in that is painfully obvious to all of us. And then secondly, issuance of additional shares at a discount to prior net asset value per share.
Okay.
Well, let me put that in maybe more layman's terms. If you look around at our competitors, and you know we're in the group that is competing with each other, if you've got a portfolio of loans at 12, 13, 14%, and under FAS 157, someone walks in the door and says these are all going to be repriced at 17.5%, you are going to take a significant hit on the value. The NAV value of your portfolio, even though these are performing loans, even though they will, we hope, all pay off. So that's one hit to the NAV. A second hit is when you issue shares below net asset value in order to be sure that you have the liquidity to be able to pay your bank off 100%, which we wanted to be sure we had. Some other people took some risk in that category, and I think that they wish that they had followed the strategy we followed. Thirdly, when you look at buying something like Patriot, it's the gift that keeps on giving, right? You issue the shares below NAV in order to be able to buy Patriot, and then when you buy Patriot...
Yeah, it comes back, I understand.
But my point is it takes a long time, and that's why... The NAV right now does not reflect what we believe will be the benefit of owning that Patriot portfolio at a discount. Now, I have to add that if things default in there and don't pay us back, well, then the accretion we're hoping to get, we would not get. But we believe that this is a gift that keeps on giving with deferred, in a sense, it's a deferred asset.
Okay, and then my last question is, relates to dividend is not the correct term there, but
distribution,
right, which is obviously considerably more than what we're looking at as income. And I'm wondering what event you're looking at that says, yes, that's maintainable because the following things we're expecting to have happen.
Sure. Well, one important consideration when you're studying our company and studying the broad context of other similar types of companies is we have a balance sheet today which has virtually no indebtedness. And we chose to capitalize ourselves that way, in fact, to expand our equity base over the past year as a sign of strength, given the uncertainty of the credit markets. One strategy other companies have pursued to their detriment has been the, you know, borrow long, lend short.
No, I'm well aware of that.
Right. So, borrow short, lend long with illiquid assets. That was Patriot Capital in a nutshell. And now as the credit markets are improving, the ability to drive longer-term facilities with more flexible terms becomes more and more attractive. And so our intention is to draw more upon credit and to drive positive spread income over time. Virtually none of that is reflected in the current snapshot of the numbers you see because we have not leveraged even to a relatively modest extent our existing, you know, all equity funded pool of assets.
Okay. Well, if I can short circuit that a bit, with as I'm hearing you say, basically, as we leverage it out, then our earnings will come up to what we are currently distributing.
Well,
is that a shorthand or is that too simplified?
Well, I look. This is John Barry speaking. I think it's a little too simplified because first, we've never made any predictions about, other than giving guidance and announcing dividends, Jim, at the time that they are declared by the board.
I understand that, but there's an implied in the stock and the stock value that things will continue or they won't continue, and on prospect, of course, with the 30 or 40% decline it's had over the last month or so. The market seems to be saying that it probably won't happen. So that's what I'm trying to understand.
Well, I think the correct word is inference, not implication.
Okay.
It's an inference that you may be making, and you're certainly entitled to make it. We do not imply, infer, predict. We never have. What we tell people is look at our track record. That's one thing. And then what Greer has said is that, and by the way, with respect to the market, I might take a look at the market as a whole. When I look at the market, I compare us to the market as a whole. I don't view us as like the lone guy out there on the track.
Understand.
But, you know, well, there's been certain things happening in the markets the last, you know, few couple of weeks, which you might, you know, want to get up to speed on.
I'm well aware of it and have the whip marks to prove it.
Okay, so let me go to the next point, Jim, and that is that what Greer is saying is the traditional model for these business development companies was put all of your equity capital to work, then borrow at much lower rates, and you're getting, in effect, a turbocharge for your net investment income. Okay, and what Greer is pointing out is our gas tank is full. Okay, we haven't used our credit. We have the ability to do that. But what we can't do is then go from saying our gas tank is full, therefore, we know we're going to go win this or that race.
Okay. Gotcha. I thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Hey, the next question we have comes from Rob Schwartzberg of Compass Point. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a little new to the story, and so perhaps you covered this, but I thought that the Patriot acquisition was, when it's fully ramped up, going to add as much as 10 cents a quarter across the board, and you did 25 cents in the September quarter, so that to me would mean that you would be somewhere around a 35 cent per quarter run rate when it's fully integrated, and then it looks like your guidance is 24 to 32 cents, so can you walk me through again what the difference is from, is it somehow less accretive, or what's, maybe you can help me with that.
Sure. Yeah, I think we had said to folks is somewhere in the range of 9 cents per quarter in the past associated with that book. With our guidance, you know, we try to be as careful as possible in what we put out there. You know, there's a reflection there of some of what's going on in the existing book and some of it related to Patriot, not expecting any early repayment or accretion beyond that. We had a few cents of some new non-accruals we talked about earlier. Iron Horse, for example, being one of those. We're optimistic about the leading indicators for some of those deals. We wouldn't necessarily factor that into guidance.
Okay, but so in a nutshell, if there's somewhat of a reduction from the run rate that you thought, it has more to do with your legacy book than it has to do with Patriot. Is that fair to say?
I think that's a fair comment. Of course, one aspect that we haven't included there, as I said in reference to an earlier question, is by adding positive spread income from prudent leverage. We've been very careful about leverage as a company, which has been the undoing of others. That should accrete to the bottom line, and we really haven't factored that into to much at all in the future.
Okay, but it's not so much a change in expected funding costs or anything like that on a go-forward basis, is it?
No, not at all. On the contrary, we're managing towards an objective of reducing funding costs. When we did our extension in the first half of 2009, it was probably the worst time in, 5 years, 10 years, you can imagine to be working on an extension, mm-hmm. Given where the credit markets were. The credit markets, as John pointed out earlier, have improved substantially since that time. There's a lot more optimism when we talk to existing and prospective lenders about, really the health of their balance sheets, but also their outlook on the markets in general. And so we're driving towards a lower cost in the future.
Okay. I mean, I still feel like there's something. I mean, it's a relatively, as a couple of people have mentioned, it's a pretty wide range of guidance, 24 to 32, but particularly in the context of the fact that you're running at 25 and now you've made this accretive acquisition, one would expect that it would certainly be higher than 24 for the next quarter once it's...
Well, it's a fair point, Rob. Many of our peers have stopped issuing any guidance whatsoever.
Right.
We have maintained that and to be helpful to folks, and we do have a range associated with it, and if we put on the books some new originations, for example, that could have a significant positive impact.
Right, and by the way, I agree with your strategy of being as unlevered as possible. So, congrats to you on that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Hey, the next question we have comes from Alan Young of RC Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I appreciate you guys taking the time on this. In the queue, you refer to some potential synergies with the PCAC acquisition. Can you quantify that at all?
Sure. Most of the synergy has been in a reduction in G&A expenses associated with areas like D&O insurance, board costs, legal costs associated with running their business. They're hiring third-party investor relations firms,
IT vendors.
How much? Any idea that you can share?
Let's see about getting that number, and we'll publicize that on the call if we can get back for you quickly.
Am I correct? An earlier question, the answer was that the OID accretion from PCAP was running about $3 million on a monthly basis. Is that right?
That's inclusive of interest income, cash pay interest income out of the book.
Oh, so that's cash paying interest plus OID accretion.
Correct.
Can you break out just specifically the OID part?
The OID portion, I think we've messaged, is somewhere in the range of $4 to $5 million per quarter.
$4 to $5 million per quarter. Okay.
You can divide that for a monthly look.
That
assumes again. That's running
portfolio.
It forward to with no early repayments. If we have early repayments,
exactly,
then we can have significantly faster accretion.
Understood.
And again, accounting-wise, it's different from how others might account for things. We think more aggressively. Others might say, "Hey, if I bought something for $50 that was marked at $100, I'm going to take $50 in as an income gain all in day one." We're not big fans of that approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're treating it as though you bought a bond at a discount, and you're amortizing it over the remaining period till maturity.
Exactly right.
Okay. Kind of bigger picture, the $650 million portfolio, what percentage of that runs off on an annual basis?
Our weighted average maturity is, what would you say, Brian, about?
3 to 3.5 years.
Three and a half years.
So three and a half years. So that would be one.
It's concentrated more towards the back end.
It is. Any idea over the next 12 months what runs off? Dollars amount, $50 million.
That's probably not a bad estimate.
Okay.
As Brian mentioned, there's tends to be a little more back end. We do have amortization out of the existing book, but not necessarily rapid amortizing structures that we put on. In some cases, what we do to be protective is we'll have cash sweep mechanisms such that. Payments come back to us. It's an interesting exercise that we talk about a lot as we're structuring deals on the nature of amortization. In general, we're big fans from a credit standpoint of having, more capital come back as soon as possible. But as anyone knows that's gone out and solicited and structured and closed a credit facility, you can shoot yourself in the foot if you add too much scheduled AM early on, because then if you impose that in too heavy a fashion and a company, goes through anything and they miss a principal payment, boom, it's knocked out of your borrowing base. And you say, geez, I wish I hadn't done that. So that doesn't mean you have no scheduled AM, but you might want to think about having that a portion schedule, but then a portion be subject to a mandatory cash sweep based on cash availability.
Okay.
So that ends up being, not all the time, but where in a lot of cases we end up.
And we currently have about $100 million available on the revolver, and there's an advance rate, I think, against securities with a market value of some $300+ million. Is that right?
That's correct, and as I said earlier in the call, as we take the proceeds of that borrowing base draw and redeploy it into eligible collateral and then add that back in the pool, in an iterative fashion, our borrowing base availability goes up and we can then draw more.
So you invest that 100 and it gives you another 50 borrowing capability?
If you invest the 100 into eligible collateral,
yep.
Somewhere in that range.
And that's currently priced at LIBOR plus 400 and you're working to reduce that?
We're looking to reduce that, yes.
All right. Term capital, if you have an advance rate on your existing portfolio, what would term capital, which I presume would be secured, what would they look for, what would they look to as collateral?
Well, the term lenders right now, our sense of the market is, it's a little choppy to envision unsecured term debt, given interest rates, yield curve, et cetera. Perhaps more of that market will open up, and we're monitoring that carefully. Right now, the market seems to be much more geared towards wanting security, wanting collateral, wanting to be pari passu with the revolving bank lenders, and therefore piggybacking off of the same covenants, borrowing-based calculations, advance rates, and the like. But that could change over time.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, if you're looking at new investments in the marketplace, I know it's tough to generalize, but just what kind of spreads to LIBOR are you seeing when you put new money to work?
We're seeing on our senior secured deals somewhere in the range of 11 to 14% coupons. You might sometimes call that stretch senior or unitranche senior as well. So we're talking about 1,000 to 1,400 basis points over LIBOR, and then on a mezzanine basis for true junior debt, somewhere in the 15 to 18% range, maybe with some warrants as well. The other factor, in addition to where you sit in the capital structure, is the size of the borrower. One niche area that we like is the $3 to $10 million EBITDA range company, in which there is a far lessened competition And there's still it's still a great environment in the, you know, call it $10 to $30 million EBITDA range as well, but a tad more people involved at that company size. But we really like that lower middle market niche, which is something that Patriot had pursued successfully in its history as well.
Okay.
So, by the way, I'd like that. Let me just add something related to the origination and so on. People are wishing, as in fact we are wishing, that we had a crystal ball and we could tell how many deals would close each week, each quarter. And in fact, just to give you an example, one of our very good originators had nothing that was likely to result in a term sheet anytime soon 3 weeks ago. And so now this week he has four or five deals that are going to term sheet, going through approvals. It's $150 to $200 million. A lot of time and effort has gone into these transactions. Some went away from us and came back. And that's the nature of the lumpiness of the business that we have. We now have to give this person more resources so that he's able to move forward and close these things. And that's really the explanation, or part of the explanation, for at this point having a wider range than we would like to have.
Right. So I can just kind of big picture again, I can see maybe $50 million of the existing portfolio running off and probably going back in at the investment ranges you mentioned, which probably is better yield than it was giving us before. We can draw on the revolver 100, invest that. That'll free up another 50 on the revolver. We're paying LIBOR plus 400 there. I can figure out the spread on that. And we have pro forma combined $18.1 million for Q2 PCAP and PSEC net investment income. I saw that disclosure in the Q, and maybe there's some one-time OID in there I can subtract out, but that'll give me a sense of a run rate on a fully invested basis, and that, of course, excludes surprise paydowns. Is that kind of the math as we're trying to run through this?
That's fair, yeah. And okay. For the OID, I would say, is not necessarily one times. We expect to get that every quarter for quite some time. And then we take the proceeds from a full par repayment and then redeploy those at a significantly higher spread. Some of the Patriot book had not just lower spread deals, but they did not have a LIBOR floor. And current deals are much more likely to have LIBOR floors and significant spreads attached to them. In our legacy prospect book, we monitored interest rates very carefully. And when LIBOR was at 500 basis points at the peak of the last cycle, we wanted floors and everything because we said, look, we don't have a crystal ball, but we know during the last recession with Fed policy, LIBOR went down to 100 basis points. Let's put floors in these deals. Mm-hmm. We're very glad we did so, of course, because LIBOR has gone below even 100. It's, you know, gone down to 25 basis points. And so we're very happy we have those floors. In buying the Patriot book, of course, we bought it at a discount, and LIBOR, unless someone tells me otherwise, can't go below zero. And so we have the built-in floor of zero now in that book. But as those loans reprice, we'll be able to put them out at higher spreads.
Right. Now, there was that $4.6 million of recognized OID last quarter came from prepayments. Is that right? It was an accelerated?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, a portion, it was accelerated. A portion we would have gotten already as part of the ongoing course.
Any idea what the division was between what you would have gotten? In other words, if I take that $18.1 million pro forma in the queue and back out the one time, if you will, from prepay, what would be a kind of recurring number?
Well, let's see. Actually, the ongoing, we owned the book for just under a month, so it wasn't a full, you know, quarter. It's called the ongoing accretion. Some in the range of... Brian has a fuller answer for you.
Yeah, the accretion's about $1 million a month.
Okay, assuming static portfolio going forward.
Correct.
All right, and that's kind of gets us to the, well, you had said $4 to $5 million a quarter, so maybe it's a little less than the $4 to $5 million a quarter.
Yes, that
was inclusive of. That's a fair point. That we were at about $4 million, and then we had some early accretion, so that reduces to somewhere between 3 and 4 million going forward. The 4 to 5 I quoted was before we had some of these earlier repayments.
Okay, so $3 to $4 million per quarter.
Right, but then again, we take the proceeds and we put them out in higher spreads. So
that's correct. Okay, I think that's helpful. It seems like everyone on the call is trying to get a sense of what we just walked through. Perhaps that's, that gives us a little more clarity on how we end up earning the dividend, which is, I guess, what everyone is asking a million different ways.
Thank you, Alan.
Oh, I appreciate your time, guys, very much.
Sure. Thank you.
The next question we have comes from Greg Mason of Stifel Nicolaus.
Yes, just to follow up, I had a question on the interest expense during the quarter. You had roughly no borrowings last quarter, $10 million this quarter, yet you had about a $2 million interest expense in the quarter. Can you walk us through what was in that number? Was it something to the PCAP acquisition?
No, it's really it's amortization of cost plus we're paying for, on our undrawn commitments.
So those are the upfront commitment fees amortized over the life of the facility?
Right, plus what we pay in commitment fees on an ongoing basis for the undrawn revolver.
Okay. Does that go through the end of the current facility, which I think is June of this year, or does that go all the way through the full one-year amortization period after the facility matures in June?
The latter. And if you go to page 54 of our 10-Q, you can see that laid out in chapter and verse.
Great. So we'll have this kind of base interest expense, and then whenever we borrow, we'll go on top of that number?
Well, not quite, because, you know, if you're paying on an undrawn portion, you wouldn't pay that when you draw.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. And then one other clarification to the last conversation you just had. You talked about you'll be able to take the accreted discount and reinvest those proceeds. How does that line up with, I think earlier in the call it was implied that you'll take some of that and pay the dividend, and that will be classified as a return of capital. Can you kind of balance those two statements of taking capital and redeploying it versus needing it to pay the dividend?
Well, I guess you have to break out the components of the cash repayment. We're getting a fair amount of principal back as well. It's not just the income portion, and we're reinvesting. You know, we're reinvesting that as new transactions in an attractive spread environment. But you got to look at the entire cash payment received, not just the income portion thereof.
Okay, so likely the principal payment you get back reinvest, but the accretion into income, that cash payment will go out the door to the dividend.
Correct.
Great.
We got about $45 million of repayments last quarter, for example, well in excess of the income accretion recognition, you know, portion.
Yeah, so you had $45 million paid back, recorded 4.6 of that into income. So roughly you can redeploy $40 million and the 4.6 goes to help pay the dividend.
Correct.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
The next question we have comes from Louis Pajarias, investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for the good disclosure and lengthy conference call. I have not been able to find anything on your website or elsewhere as to the results of the proxy solicitation you had for the issuance of additional shares. Are you able to tell us anything about that?
It's in our 10-Q on page 60, and the votes were in the affirmative on all the proposals. You'll see it on page 60.
I'm sorry, I missed it.
You go to page 60 in our 10-Q. The votes were in the affirmative on all proposals.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question we have comes from Mark Sunderhus of Red Rocks Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Appreciate the time you're taking on the call today, and I want to be clear. I admire your business model, as you referenced it earlier, that you guys have gone about running a BDC in a different capacity. And I would just have two quick, I guess they're comments, and if you want to take them as questions or comment on them, I would be grateful. Given all of the different moving parts that exist right now and a lot of the questions around the wide range of guidance, would you be willing either at a conference or maybe to consider doing a mid-quarter update? I don't think it's something that you've done historically, but again, I would request that at the basis of shareholders simply to give a little bit more insight as you kind of work through where you are and what you're doing. And then the second question would simply be, speaking generically, have you thought, as you make potential further acquisitions, of the idea of only on the assets acquired, of having a variable fee structure that is commensurate with growth in book value or specificity in dividend growth outside of obviously borrowed dividends? I think it's allowed after reading both the 40 Act and the BDC prospectuses that we're familiar with, and would be curious if you guys would consider that, because it may go a long way to either completing things that you may currently be focused on or things in the future.
You know, I'll take the second question first. I heard that Obama yesterday stated that he was delighted that Jimmy Dimon was getting paid whatever it was, and that Lloyd Blank Dime was getting paid. So maybe we're going to recover from this theory that people who work hard should not be paid a lot of money. I would like to see everybody at this company paid an awful lot of money, a huge multiple of what they're currently paid. They work 7 days a week. You should come and sit with us 7 days a week. We're on the phone doing things at 11:45 at night. So what I would suggest is the concept of, it's like my father thinks, if there's billionaires out there, there's only so much money, and the more money one person has, somebody else has to have less. It's like a monopoly game. They only give you so much money at the beginning. We don't subscribe to that. We subscribe to the view that people should work hard, perform for shareholders, and should be paid a lot of money. So I just wanted to get that on the table because it's an old-fashioned concept that maybe I'm the last person in the room to be promoting.
No, we would even go a step further, saying if you outperform your peers, we have no issue paying yourselves commensurate to the value you add relative to your peer group. So it's not a capping question. It really is a theoretical question about maybe a way to derive more support for deals that you may pursue.
Right. But I wanted to just continue on the topic, just so that you understood my position on that. I hope Bentleys are surrounding our building when I come in tomorrow. On both topics, though, as Greer said earlier, we always want to consider ourselves rational, logical, objective, data-driven, truth-seekers. And so when someone walks in front of us and says, you know what, this would all work better for everybody in the situation if we changed it to this way or that way or another way, we always listen, and we review these things, and we grind them through. And so now you'll probably be gratified to know that we've already looked at both of the ideas that you have set forth and have considered them, and we'll continue to consider them. And based on your raising both of those ideas, we will even consider them harder than we would have before. As far as variable fee structures and so on, you'll be gratified to know that our company has had those going back to 1988, and we've done very, very well with them. Sometimes, you know, some of the investors have issues with them for various reasons. Some people, like you, think they're wonderful. So, you know, it gets down to can you keep all, you know, we want to keep as many people as possible happy for as long as possible, but sometimes we find that it's very, very hard to keep all of the people happy all of the time. That's that topic. On the presentation, we do these presentations from time to time at these conferences, and what we should do is let you know. We were just contacted for another one just the other day, and what we should do is maybe post it on our website or ask these investment banks that promote these confabs to make sure that you know about it, and even if they don't, we will make sure you know about it. We believe that the more communication we can have with our shareholders And the more transparent we can be about what we're attempting to do, the wins, the losses, the ties, the lower will be our cost of capital over time, which of course enables us to be successful competing in a very competitive marketplace. So I really do appreciate the suggestions.
It's a good idea, Mark. We'll definitely take that under advisement.
All right. Then one just two other very quick questions that are just related to macro within your business. One would be, what is the, and if it's out there somewhere, I apologize, I can't find it in current form. If you were going to show us a pie chart and we were going to lump things outside of debt investments, be it warrants or converts or whatnot, and maybe you put convert under debt and then break it out depending on where conversion price is. Can you just talk about split right now between debt component and equity? I realize it's heavily, if not, 90% plus on the debt, and then the second component of that would be, in this environment and cost of funds and as you grow scale, your thoughts, given that equity investments potentially, stressing that word, may pay off in many cases better than some debt investments. I can only think of one BDC here in the U.S. that has primarily equity investments, and would just like to hear your philosophical thoughts, because obviously the way you have to allocate capital, the two, is extremely different.
Okay. It's Greer, Mark. Thank you for your question. You can see the full breakout of all the types of assets on page 46 on our 10Q. Related to the question about equity positions, we think that our business model of having balanced strategies, which means we lend money to closely held companies, we lend money to private equity sponsor-owned companies, and we buy companies, owning both the debt and the equity and managing towards total return, is a great strategy to help make money no matter where we are in the cycle. Because if you're just long, take sponsor finance. If you're just long sponsor finance, there are going to be periods of time, and we saw it in a big, big way in 2006 and 2007, where being along that strategy and putting capital out is a very imprudent thing to do. And why was it imprudent? Well, people were, in order to, quote, compete, they were dialing up the leverage, they were accepting modest spreads, doing it just because they had to keep along with everyone else. Well, if you're only long one thing, then you have to do that. If you, on the other hand, have a balanced approach like we do, you can marry in your own self-originated deals to buy companies on a negotiated basis, to lend money to closely held companies. And those two strategies, I think why you see many folks don't do them, is they require a lot of work. There's no third-party private equity firm who does the diligence and the market studies and the quality of earnings assessment. You just, quote, piggyback off of that and draft behind that as a lender. Here, we are the primary institution. We have to do all the work. We're not looking to others to do that, to study their work. And so it's a much higher effort type strategy to originate and to screen and to assess, but becomes well rewarded. And you see that off of how well, warrants and equity positions have paid off on a one-time basis for us in the past, as well as on a going-forward basis or an ongoing basis with dividend distributions from certain investments. The area that didn't work out as well, which we have discontinued, is in the area of project financing, which I left out of the ongoing forward strategy. But right now, here in early 2010, you have a market environment whereby companies with 2009 EBITDA is, most likely, unless we have a double dip recession, trough EBITDA. So that's a great profitability bogey to be purchasing businesses off of, and we are significantly pursuing our buyout strategy in conjunction with sponsor finance and other forms of lending, and we think to go put those positions on the books with the associated upside is important. Now, it doesn't mean you pursue deals on no matter what basis. Value is always critical, and as anyone that's ever visited our offices knows, we are very value conscious in everything that we do. And that means when we buy companies, we're not the folks that chase it, as have others that pursue this sort of equity strategy within a BDC context have found out, paying the 8, 10, 12, 14 times multiples to, quote, win these auctions. It makes no sense whatsoever, and you're not going to be able to produce enough gains out of your equity book to make that strategy viable. But if you're paying 3 to 5 times EBITDA, which has been our purchase multiple range on buyouts, which is only a little bit more than a lending multiple, in some cases less because we've gotten attractive deals, then you're paying very little for that equity option. That premium, that strike, if you will, is very low.
I particularly like your last comment. If you could just I went to page 46 at your suggestion, and my only question would be, and I don't know if you've given guidance on this historically, then on the top line where you break out control, affiliate, and non-control.
Yeah.
Have you talked about, and I understand the confines of the BDC on control and non-control, but can you talk about how much you might stretch that control number to?
Well, we're allowed to go to 50% right. Under the BRIC rules as a max, and we retain the flexibility to go, well, maybe not right up to 50%, because anytime we have numbers we guide towards, we like having a cushion, but to go significantly towards that. And it's important to point out, we do not have hard and fast allocations for our deal teams. We don't say, well, X percent has to be this type and Y percent that type. We'd rather have each opportunity live or not live on a standalone basis and be attractive, risk-adjusted to us. But, having said that, there is an aspect of recognizing opportunity, saying, hey, we want to be doing more buyouts in the current environment. So we're significantly pursuing that strategy.
Okay, and then just one last question. On the preferred line and the common stock line of 1.7 and 2.9, how many of those are coupled with debt investments as well, or how many of them are just standalone preferred and common stock? Do you know that off the top of your head by chance?
I don't know that off the top of my head, because those line items would apply to both non-control and control situations.
Great. Maybe at some point we can discuss it further. Appreciate your insights.
Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the next question we have comes from Brian McMahon of Thornbird Investment. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Questions have been answered.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Thank you, sir. This concludes our question and answer session. I would now like to turn the conference over to management for any closing remarks.
Okay, well, we thank everybody, and we know the snowstorm has got some people heading for the exits, so we appreciate everybody taking the time, and have a wonderful lunch. Bye now.
Thank you all.
Hey, thank you, gentlemen, for your time. The conference is now concluded. We thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.